What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Hoosier Town Breakdown. It's January 3rd, 2020. Deuce. I'm here with Greg Nash.
Happy New Year, Alan.
And I'm Alan Platt. Happy New Year, Greg. And we have a guest in the hall.
Our first ever studio guest.
Oh, my gosh. This is exciting. Go ahead and introduce.
Well, our first ever studio guest, after multiple attempts to get him on the set, and quite frankly, after just a number of requests for folks that want to get on this show, we've had to fend folks off for about 4 years now, and we said, you know, we don't want to just bring any guest on the show. We got to make sure it's the right one, and so we have none other than the Big Easy.
Didn't get the right one.
The Big Easy, Zach McCright.
With me.
He is live action here in the studio.
Thank you for having me. This is quite the abode. I've never been to the
Shea Nash.
Yeah. Well, not I have been here, but not to the
lair.
Yeah, the lair.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. The basement. The dungeon.
The kegerator is. I've been staring at that ever since I got in here. I got a great view of it.
We're saving. I'm going to activate that for a real special guest one time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Wow. Don't fire it up just for me.
We'll get Coach Woodson on
I'm
the
just
show.
Having a,
we're going to
wood.
Something we're gonna,
can
he
you
did,
hear? Can you hear that in the microphone?
He did pour some drinks for us, everybody. Well, so season Those 4, episode
bells,
6,
folks.
We're in the new year. We've had 2 basketball games since we last visited, and 1 canceled. Due to COVID, and so we knocked off the Northern Kentucky Norse?
The Fighting Covingtons.
Oh, yeah. We like to make up names for the teams, too. I'm just going to call
it. I think it is Norse, okay. Whatever that
it
means.
It is Norse.
It
yeah.
is, okay.
What does that mean exactly?
Great question.
Can we get our interns
somebody
on that
slurred,
stat?
Somebody,
it's a baby horse.
Somebody slurred the word Northern Kentucky, and they just came
Northern
with Norse. Anyway.
If only someone had a device that they could look that up.
Are
oh,
you
wait a minute. I got one right here.
Googly.
What is a Norse?
Googly it, Mr. Zach.
So we knocked off the Norse at Assembly Hall on a Wednesday night, and the game went kind of as expected, Greg. I think it was a 79-61 win on December 22nd, you know, so you get that right before the Christmas holiday. Good to get away with a win. And anything of note from that game?
Well, for all you gamblers out there, I think it was an 18.5 point spread. We won by 19, so ooh. Merry Christmas there. But it was one of those kind of, we didn't really play that great in spurts, and at times we played pretty good. But, you know, at the time we were like, well, it's pre-Christmas. They were not really excited about it. But you always make those excuses when you're not a superior team. When you're just really, at this point, I hate to say we're somewhat mediocre and maybe slightly north of average.
Let's wait and see. Let's
wait
and
see.
We were one shot away from slightly north of average.
One shot.
Right? At least for now. We could do one Trace Jackson 3-point shot maybe away. I don't know.
One shining moment in Happy Valley.
That still a lot to be determined.
Yeah.
So we will move on to Happy Valley because that game is the one that I think is the most important for us to cover and kind of maybe help gauge where the Hoosiers are right now. We did miss a December 29th game with North Carolina Asheville due to COVID on their team.
Biltmore University.
That was going to be, you know, getting another home prep before we get into the kind of the weight of the Big Ten season. So we head to Happy Valley on Sunday, January 2nd, 4 o'clock, Penn State, 5,000, if you're lucky in the stands. Everybody was really psyched for that game. What do you think?
We were psyched, right? It was a new year, new beginnings. We were, as we projected the last show, we said we would, you know, we'd beat the Norse, we'd beat Asheville. Well, we said we had to beat Notre Dame. We did. Check that. I don't think it's a high quality win, but at least you didn't lose an in-state opponent. And we thought Penn State would be a win. We thought we got Ohio State coming up in a couple nights, so we just felt like it'd be an opportunity to get a good road win against a solid team, and really any road win in the Big Ten is huge. We didn't get it done. We just didn't get it done. It was there for the taking. We had multiple opportunities. You know, I don't know how in the weeds we want to get right here and right here now, but you want to
we'll dive into that in a minute. So Zach, just so we kind of jumped in and kind of started talking about basketball, but let's talk about your background. So Greg and I, we've talked about Big Easy since years and years ago when you were on radio here locally, both really liked listening to you. You then went on to move to St. Louis and did sports radio there. Where else?
Correct.
Oklahoma?
Oklahoma City. Yeah. So
tell us about your years in those.
Yeah. So I worked in the Louisville market, obviously, my hometown. Well, I say my hometown. It's weird. If you tell people you're from Louisville, they think you're from Kentucky automatically. You're really not. We live on the Indiana side, the God's country side of Louisville, Kentucky, in southern Indiana. But I worked here from, at least in sports radio, on the air from 2005 to 2011. Got a job at...
Now, that was... I'm reminiscing here.
Go ahead.
Hoosier Talk?
That's right. You used to text me, and
I was one of your loyal listeners.
You were. I was the first Indiana sport. No one will ever. This will never go down unless you keep the rumor alive. This will never go down in lore.
We're going back
in the Louisville market. I was the first Indiana-based show. Local show in the Louisville market back when streaming wasn't a huge thing yet in radio, and so you really need and now, granted, as you well know, Greg, the signal wasn't great, but it was yet a signal of radio that talked about the Hoosiers, I think, a couple nights a week for an hour.
It was a beacon of hope, because in this media market that's infiltrated with U of L and UK, I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, we have a talk show dedicated to the Hoosiers.
Right.
Hoosier Talk.
For 1 hour, like maybe once a week or twice a week, not very much, but at least it was there, right? So I did that from 2005 to 2011 at a couple of different outlets. Got a quote-unquote call-up to ESPN in St. Louis. Did that from 2011 to 2014. Got a different call to go to Oklahoma City and work in sports radio there from 2014 to the beginning of 2016. Had a year left on the contract. Had our first kid. Kid came down with some heart ailments. She's fine now, but my wife and I are both from this area originally, so it was kind of like the calling home after she had her open heart surgery at 4 months old. It was kind of like a calling. So I gave up the last year of that contract. Came back here and dabbled with coming back and doing radio full time, had an offer to do it. And, you know, as you guys well know, I mean, life happens and you start to, you know, as your career goes, so does the salary, right? Usually, hopefully, for most people out there. And when I came back here, it was like, well, remember what you were getting paid 6 years ago? We'll give you something close to that. I'm like, I couldn't do it. So I was like, you know, if you cut me a day rate that's similar, I'll come when I can and do something else in life. And so that's what I did. So I dabble still a little bit in radio here in Louisville, in the Louisville metro area, southern Indiana. But yeah.
Yeah, it seems like you get on some calls and podcasts at times. Mm-hmm. And again, maybe as that beacon of hope, it seems like you do talk about a lot of things, but you do cover Indiana sports a good bit and talk about IU and have knowledge about IU, which is always exciting for some of us that listen, because a lot of times when IU gets mentioned still in the local area, it's kind of limited as far as perspective, I think. Now, we, like you said, though, we have streaming now, so we got Assembly Call and all these other things that are great.
And Hoosier Town Breakdown.
Well, of course, that goes without saying.
So, other than Zach brings a lot to the studio table here, and
poker table. It appears.
It appears to be that, and so not just the smooth chords and the deep pipes, but the aura. And the studlyism. I mean,
can you talk to my wife?
Here, basically, what Alan and I try to do is class up this joint, right? You know, we had to bring in a big hitter to kind of just legitimize us a little bit.
15 minutes, he'll be in. No, I do want to ask you too. One other thing I think people find interesting that I find amazingly interesting is that you are now a volleyball referee, including at the NCAA level, refed in the NCAA tournament this year for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of tell us about how you got into that. I know you've had a long history and love of volleyball, but how did you get into that?
Yeah, I mean, it's I never know where to start on things like this, but I mean, basically, my family was always into volleyball. I mean, I can remember being a young child and my parents were playing co-rec, you know, at whatever the local gym was back then that is no longer around here in this area. But
future sponsor.
You know, right. Yeah, that's right.
Please make a note of it.
But, you know, and then that grew into us going to the local high school's volleyball games whenever my parents didn't have a relative playing. They just went because that local high school volleyball team was good and they knew some of the parents. And so I tagged along and all of a sudden we're in RVs and we're traveling to high school volleyball matches in RVs, which is just ridiculous, but that's kind of how you catch the bug. And then my sister played, after I got out of high school, I started coaching, you know, and the ball just got rolling from there. So I coached for 20 years, and then when you have two kids, you know, coaching 7 days a week, but you can't give volleyball up, you know, you can't give something up that you loved and did for 20 years as a passion because you don't really get paid a whole lot for it. You can't just give it up cold turkey. So I was like, what's some sort of in between? And so reffing was it. Did that, started that 3 years ago, and it just kind of took off like wildfire. I always tell people, like, they're like, you know, you're already in the NCAA tournament after your third year. And I'm like, man, look. A, they're scraping the bottom, but B, they're literally looking for everyone that has any sort of volleyball experience past officiating, and I just happen to have it at 20 years as a coach. So that's kind of how that all worked out, and it's worked out. It's fun. It beats it beats not being involved with the game anymore, and you're kind of undefeated on this side.
Yeah,
that's not how it is in coaching.
Yeah. So what was probably the biggest game you did this year, and how far did you have to travel for a game?
There's probably two. One would be the NCAA tournament, and the first and second round that I got assigned to was in Lexington, so that wasn't too far, Lexington, Kentucky. But it was also the defending NCAA champions, yeah. And they lost. Yeah. They got beat at home in front of their own crowd, and there was like zero controversy. They just kind of like just got beat. You could feel the tension in the crowd as they're getting beat on their home floor, and it was surreal.
Interesting.
The other one was I got a national certification as a line judge, which is, if for those people that are unaware of volleyball, if you ever see somebody on one of the corners of the court with a flag in their hand, they're line judges, and I got my national certification at Creighton in Omaha. That was probably the farthest I went this year. That in Las Vegas. But Omaha for college, Las Vegas was for kind of the club outlet. But yeah, Creighton was in Nebraska. Volleyball is huge, so it's the small. You know, obviously it's not the size of the University of Nebraska, but it's a 5,000 seat gym that was filled all the way to capacity, and that was probably a really, really fun atmosphere. They played Illinois, and it was and Creighton won. It was a great match.
That's cool. That is
awesome. Yeah. Well, I find that interesting, and I do. You're being pretty humble. I think you've had to go do a lot of training. I think you posted somewhere some of your notes from a review with a peer.
Yeah.
And I read through those, and the insight I could just tell from the insight that you were getting from that guy, and the detail that you all have to pay attention to is pretty amazing. So
it's funny you all mentioned like stuff like that. I'm taking off the sweatshirt. I used to not
he does have a shirt on underneath the sweatshirt, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh yeah,
well, we gotta make him,
it's not
good context,
it's not that kind of studio. But is an ESPN sweatshirt, by the way, which
this is my be a scrub wherever I go, this is my be a scrub sweatshirt. Sorry. But no, I forgot my train of thought. I pay a lot more attention to referees now than I ever used to. I was never a ref before 3 years ago. And if the training, I'm sure it is, if the training is anything as detailed as the volleyball officiating training is, you kind of have a new appreciation for what the referees in basketball and football who on top of all of their, you know, training and knowledge of the rules, et cetera, also have to run a lot, which volleyball referees don't. There's a whole different appreciation.
Yeah. No, I'm sure you probably, especially when you see the pressure that's on, like you were, you know, you were doing a game for the defending national champs. I'm sure that you all don't necessarily always think about those things when you go in. You just want to referee a good, fair game. And at the same time, you recognize that there's a lot riding on those games.
Sure.
And the same thing for referees at all other levels of sport.
Yeah, and you don't want to screw it up. Like you hope to get out of there and nobody talks about you. I mean, that's what you hope, and you don't care who wins. Like, you know, it felt weird watching a national champion go down, and that was the end of their season, and you're there for it. However, we walked out of there going, I think we're good. You know, I think we're not going to get killed on the way out of here. Like, even though everybody is pissed, we're not going. They're not going to come after us.
You're not the reason. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, to turn it to the game that I think we were going to talk about tonight, no one left upset with the referees. We don't have a reason to complain. IU just got beat. Final score, 61-58 against Penn State. So I guess let's kind of all hit maybe just your general thoughts about the game, and then maybe we'll dive down into what maybe it means for the long haul as far as what we might see from the rest of our season if it is indeed telling. I mean, what were your thoughts, Greg?
Well, we hope it wasn't telling of what's going to continue to come. Meaning, we hope that it was the offensive ineptness and lack of efficiency. We hope that was just attributed to maybe players were just rushing shots. You know, we were just kind of not putting the ball where it needed to be in certain spots. And really not getting out on their shooters defensively. You know, that's something we always have been able to hang our hat on, that our defense was always ahead of our offense. And I guess you probably still say it is. It's just that our defense didn't come through on Sunday. You know, letting Penn State go 11 for 22 from three-point range, just not a recipe for winning. If you told me going in the game we were only going to have 6 turnovers, that was one of our Christmas wish list items, was that we would average less than 12 turnovers a game, and we only had 6. But when Trace only has 4 rebounds in 33 minutes, and then we allow 11 three-pointers, and we only hit 4 ourselves, I mean, that's the game.
Yeah.
Period.
Although, I mean, you know, to that point, we only needed to shoot. I mean, even if they shot 11 of 22, which I think was a bit surprising, that they were over their season average by about 18 percentage points. We were under our average. We hit one more three, and we're still shooting below 30%, and we win that game.
That's true, yeah. I mean, it was there for the taking with the game certainly did not pass the eye test, if you're a Hoosier fan, but we still had a shot to win it. And I guess when you look at our 3 losses this year, we haven't been blown out. We've been in the game. In fact, we controlled a majority of the Wisconsin game, completely dominated the second half of Syracuse. And then we go to Penn State, and as bad as we played, we still had a shot to win it at the end. So, I mean, there's some positives to take from that. It's just that, again, when you're coming off 4 years of Archie Miller, and you're coming off, quite frankly, how many years of, other than a few good years under Crean, a lot of years of mediocrity. And Hoosier fans are looking at how first-year coaches at Minnesota and first-year coaches at Penn State, and they're looking at the kind of – not that Penn State's having a ton of success, they're not, but Minnesota's having more success than anticipated, and they've got a first-year coach and a lot of first-year players and transfers. So, you know, as IU fans, it's like, okay, we've got Woodson, we've got the staff, we've got the All-American, we've got three five-stars on the roster – I mean, on paper.
One never sees the court.
One never sees the court. But so you're like, okay, why can't we finally beat Wisconsin for the first time in 80 years? Why can't we finally beat Syracuse for the first time since 1987? Why can't we go to Penn State and win? That's the frustration.
So, Zach, what Greg mentioned, I mean, we talked a little bit about this before we started, but what's your thought about it? Seems locally and through the state, after that game, there was a different vibe among IU fans and some of the various podcasts that cover IU, and it seems to be there's this kind of connection to, well, this is a lot like it was in the Archie Miller era. Is that right, do you think?
It's super early to say anything like that. I just think what happened, and I'd be a liar if I said that I didn't feel a little bit of it. To me, it's just PTSD. for lack of a better term. I mean, that's the way that Indiana has lost games for the past 4 years or more. If they've lost games, that's the way they usually lose it. They don't hit from three. The other team does hit from three. This one, you don't miss as many free throws as you usually do, but sometimes they were inopportune times. And that's just the way it always happened, right? So I feel like that may have accelerated the talk of the previous era more so than even the loss to Wisconsin or the loss to Syracuse. You didn't get any of that talk. At least I don't remember any. I don't remember thinking it when IU lost to one of those schools. But this one was, and it's the added thing of you're watching it happen on a court that says Penn State on it.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh,
a program that could care less about basketball.
Out loud,
right?
Stop it with Penn State. So, so all of those things combined, and I just think it's a bunch of PTSD. But, the thing that really frustrated me that. And you spoke to it a little bit, Greg, that is a little different. That I will say that in this game only that I can recall was a downgrade compared to those Archie Miller losses that were very numerous and very heartbreaking, was the openness, for lack of a better term, that some of these three-point shots had. I felt like a lot of them, there were a couple exceptions. There were a couple of lucky threes that went in the second half of the Penn State game. But there was a lot of just simple pick and pops that left Penn State players wide open for threes that I don't think happened as much in the Archie Miller era. And that made me – that's what frustrated me most out of anything in the Penn State game.
Yeah, I don't know that we got as lost on defense guarding three-point shooters any other time in this season.
I agree.
As we did against Penn State. I'm not sure why. I mean, Coach Woodson on his Monday night show with Fisher said that, you know, we just didn't touch guys. We didn't get out and make them feel us and feel the pressure. But to Zach's point, there were, I want to say, three or four that literally no one was even close. It was like they totally missed their assignment. It was blown, and it was wide open.
And a couple that you were like, oh, God, wide open again. And thank God they missed.
Yeah.
You know, good there's point, a couple of those missed. Like that, too.
But they did hit a couple late that were just.
Yes, yeah,
I mean,
Sessoms hit one with like one on the clock.
That's the one I'm thinking.
I think he was still turning toward the basket to square up and just let go, and he ripped the net. I mean, it was that was an unbelievable shot.
I told my two sons I was watching with, I was like, this kind of feels like it's their day. You know, when those kind of shots are going in, because that was the second one that they had hit that was kind of, I wouldn't say garbage, but I mean, it was just a shot it just went in, and we couldn't do anything more than we did, and it was desperation, and sometimes that's just the way it rolls. I mean, I will say, and there's a lot of different ways we can go with this, but I'm encouraged with what Woodson said post game and in his coach's show about, you know, he owns some of this stuff because he says, you know, I've got to do better. Penn State threw some different looks at us that we hadn't prepared for, and we didn't adjust to them during the game. Ironically, he said they had their best week of practice leading up to that game. Their absolute best week. He said we looked sharper than we ever have. Guys were just on point in practice. And, you know, Penn State hadn't played literally in 3 weeks. And you know, it's not like they came out, you know, just
– they weren't smoking
it. They weren't smoking it, but they were doing enough to keep us – you know, we couldn't put them away. But he did say with Parker Stewart and Miller Kopp, and I want to dive into this a little bit more, he said we need to – find a way to get those guys better looks, cleaner looks, coming off screens. If we have to run some different sets for them, we've got to figure that out. And so my thought.
Are you going to go to starting lineup? If you are, hold it.
Okay.
Okay.
You knew right where he was going.
So let me.
We talked too much pre-show. Yeah.
But before we get to that, because I do think that's a fair discussion for us. But let me ask you too. I mean, do you think there's any legitimacy of a comparison of kind of where Woodson is early in his tenure to where Archie Miller was? And I'm gonna set the table and argue that there's not much there. But I think Zach hit it on the head. I think it's absolute PTSD where you see, you know, the threes missing. But for a season, we're not shooting that poorly. We're shooting really well. I mean, Parker Stewart's hitting in the 40s. I mean, percentile for, you know, for threes. Our three-point shooting's better. I think our defensive intensity typically is better, although I don't think it was in this game. But do you think it's similar to the Archie Miller era in any way?
I think our program is 180. We've done a 180 from where we were with Archie Miller, and here's why. We're not seeing immediate results, but I'm not – this year isn't the finish line for Mike Woodson. This is the starting line. My point is I have trust in him. I think most fans have – there's an implied trust there, not just with him but with his staff. He's got good recruits coming in. I think that right now he's trying to conform his system to the players he has. He's not trying to – if he's able to bring in his players, he can conform those players to his system. Right now he's trying to conform he wants to run a different system, a four out, one in, but he's kind of has to do – with what he has.
His personnel allows, yeah.
But I think, I mean, from a standpoint of how comfortable, and that's why, honestly, the Penn State game didn't really upset me too much because it's really just a process of lowering expectations of this year. I think, you know, we need to make the tournament, but I'm starting to look longer term, and I'm starting to think, you know what? You know, this isn't going to happen overnight, unfortunately. And you could say, well, their programs, you know, first year coaches. Yeah, but where is the Minnesota coach going to be 4, 5, 6 years? I think IU is going to be a heck of a lot better shape 4, 5, 6 years out. We just have to have patience. But I think there's an implied trust with Woodson, Coach Woodson, that, you know what, it's frustrating. I don't like losing to Penn State. But let's see how we come out Thursday against Ohio State. We're going to have plenty of opportunities to right the ship. Yeah. But losing to Penn State makes it harder because now we probably have to steal a game down the road that we normally wouldn't have had to.
And there's plenty of games, you know, ahead for the Hoosiers. I mean, we're still early in the Big Ten season. And I think I texted you maybe the day after, and I think we'll play really well. I think we have a really good shot at beating Ohio State. You know, you come off a loss like this, and a lot of times that kind of helps a team get a little bit more focused. Ohio State has had a good season. I mean, they have a good record. I think they're in the top 10 now. But, I mean, they just beat Towson.
Towson.
Towson. I like anything that has the word toe in it. But
yeah, you got to go with toe.
Okay.
Toe fetish?
Or you got to go with toe. Toe is perfect.
Does our co-host have a toe fetish?
Yeah, but they you know, in December they beat them by 9. I mean – It's not like they're a world beaters. They you know, they did beat Penn State at Penn State, but well, I think the truth of the matter is they have had a couple big games and they've, you know, rose to the occasion. But I do think that IU has a really good games in them and halves like the first half against Wisconsin. And early on in our season, I talked about how I think this team, because of a completely new coaching staff, trying to mix pieces together that are all new, and some of them are freshmen. They're not just transfers. Some of them are, you know, freshmen that were, you know, like trying to bring in Bates and have him have some meaningful minutes. Anyway, I think we're going to have some games where we play like we did against Penn State. I think we're going to have some games where we played like the first half of against Wisconsin. But if we can put together a full game like that and continue to trend toward that, I think this team can still have a really high ceiling. I'm not talking, you know, but I think they get in the tournament if they meet that expectation.
I just listen to you guys talk. I think one thing that's kind of coming to mind here, and I was trying to look up stats as you guys were talking about it, is that I feel like the times that we have been the worst, the worst playing is when the tempo has slowed down. You know, obviously when you play Wisconsin, the game just feels like it's going to crawl. The entire game feels like a crawl. Syracuse, the entire game feels like a crawl. Now that game obviously went crazy because you go into double overtime and then you feel like everybody's scoring all the time, right?
Yeah.
Both teams are in triple digits, so maybe that's an exception to what is a usual rule when it comes to Syracuse in a 2-3 zone, especially and talk about PTSD with a 2-3 zone against Syracuse here in the yeah. in this millennia.
Still have flashbacks.
Right. I just feel like when the game slows down, that's where the PTSD sets in, at least for me. Where the Archie Miller years of Indiana, they kind of come back, and I saw it a little bit against Wisconsin. You mentioned the half against Wisconsin, this game too. The game slows down. You're running an offense. You're waiting till the shot clock gets down to under eight before you're taking a shot. And so is Penn State. And those are the games I feel like, especially on
the road.
IU's offensive end.
Oh yeah,
and on the road.
Yeah,
where you're almost doing the sign of the cross if you're of that ilk during the game. It's just it's maddening. It's pull your hair out maddening. And so I looked while you guys were talking, and this is why I feel like maybe the Penn State game, maybe not, but maybe the Penn State game is a little bit of an outlier. If you go back, I just went back last year, and I should have gone back more than that. In the first 13 games of last year, non-overtime games of the first 13, there was only three in which IU and their opponent combined for more than 70 possessions in a game, roughly. Okay, so you know, and my guess is 70 is probably the average because there's a red number when you go above 70. I'm looking at KenPom, by the way, KenPom.com. You know, and below 60, you get a black number, or below 70, I'm sorry, you get a black number. So I'm assuming 70 is about the average. Tennessee Tech was one last year. Stanford, they got to 71 possessions. That was a win. North Alabama, 82, and that was it. Okay. In non-overtime games. In fact, one of the overtime games, the overtime loss against Florida State last year, that was overtime. And that only got to 70 possessions in an overtime. This year, every one of their games leading up to the Syracuse game, their first six games, five of them were well above 70. You had 74, 75, 77. One was 72. The Jackson State was 64, but that was a blowout. You know, obviously the Syracuse game, double overtime. I'm not really counting that one. Nebraska, 72. Again, you're above 70. And then, you know, now we're getting into Wisconsin, right? Wisconsin was 63. You're seeing the pace. My point is drop. You're seeing the pace slow down.
Which is bad for IU.
And yeah. And Penn State got all the way down to 59, which I didn't see one low that low in all of last year with Archie. So, you know, the pace slows down, that's when I feel like every IU fan, if they're anything like me, starts to tense up. I kind of like when this team runs a little bit and kind of speeds up the pace. And they have been under Mike Woodson so far. Penn State is the exception.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I also, and it's interesting that they were all games that kind of got to be grinders that we lost. They were all on the road. And they were those types of teams that are really good at forcing you to play their tempo. I didn't think Penn State was going to be that great at it, but they certainly did. I mean,
they forced tempo.
Yeah.
If nothing else, they forced tempo.
Yeah, they did. And Shrewsbury, having been at Purdue for a few years as an assistant coach, he's familiar with IU. Not that that's, you know, when coaching changes happen, obviously the team and their style of play changes somewhat, but teams have kind of an approach, and I think typically IU has been a team that likes a little bit more up-pace tempo and plays better in that way. I am a little concerned that Woodson didn't figure out how to try to adjust that. I mean, by either picking up full court or two-thirds court, they'd have one guard typically guard the ball, the inbounds after a made basket, but it was very soft defense, and I didn't think it really changed anything. If anything, it made them go longer into the shot clock, which kept the number of possessions down.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And Zach, we appreciate those analytics. That is an added element to really upgrade our...
They don't come often from me, but that's one of the things that you just think about as I'm listening to you two talk. You know, it's something that... Doesn't that make you mad? Like the kind of game that we saw was those...
Those are the ones that make the tense.
They make IU fans crazy.
They
make
I think
me
so.
Tense because every possession, I think I saw somebody on Twitter say this, that every possession feels like a must-make possession.
Right.
Like it's, you know, make or break. And it's because there's so few possessions. I mean, in theory, at 59, I mean, that's just insane.
Well, especially when we – our offensive rebounds were so limited. Normally we can garner 6, 8, 10 points a game off offensive rebounds, or at least 6, 8, 10 points more than we normally would have, like this game. I mean, I think Trace didn't have a single offensive rebound. Race was limited. We just weren't getting those points. And so, you know, 6, 8, 10 points in a game like this is huge.
And that might be something that we're overlooking as an overall point. Penn State rebounded the ball
very well.
Very well.
Very well.
You know, there were that's as many one shot possessions that I've seen with IU in quite a while. I even think there were more against Wisconsin. I'm just going off of just memory. But you know, that again, that adds to that frustration. It adds to you know, that slow pace, that grinded out sort of thing that maybe we weren't thinking about top of mind when we're watching these games, but If you're to go back through your history, it's like, yeah, those are the games. Those grinded out games just make us crazy.
Well, when you're, quite frankly, when you're not a superior team or a great team, the margin for error is pretty thin. And so it's easy to look back and say, gosh, you know, we kind of found another way to lose, meaning, you know, we only turned the ball over 6 times, which is way below normal. Our percentage for free throws is decent, but we just, we didn't get it done. And you can look at, well, Trace missed 3 or 4 bunnies. If 1 or 2 more threes goes in, you know, just
out rebounded by 10. I think I'm glad you brought that up because I did earlier kind of just allude to the fact that it was really the three point shooting only, but the rebounding difference was pretty dramatic given the size of Penn State, which they don't have a great big front line, but especially late in the second half when they rebounded. I think they got 5 shots in one possession, you know, one trip down,
and didn't score.
And I mean, which is great. I mean, I guess.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. I mean, glass half full is that IU defended fairly well through that, but not getting 5 defensive rebounds in a row is brutal. I mean, think about how much time elapsed that we could have been down scoring and keeping the game moving. So just that's a great point. I was going to say, maybe let's get our...
let's go to the break.
Let's go to our break. I'd like you to get our ad in.
Yeah, we do have a
sponsor. And then we'll come back and maybe talk about some changes we'd like to see over the season to move this team from where they are currently to maybe hopefully being in the tournament. And if you have any starting lineup suggestions, Greg.
Yeah, we want to talk about
Woodson
that.
Listens.
We want to talk about women.
Oh, really?
Yes. We're going to talk about some women after the break.
Oh, yeah. We do need to talk about IU women. Yeah.
But do we source this?
Yeah, go ahead. I think our sponsor, our patron saint, as we like to call him, Scott Sullivan, would like to hear about this. So go ahead.
Scott Sullivan.
Sullivan.
No, he's the man. Sullivan.
Oh, I forgot. You gave him that nickname.
He's the man. So, Scott, you know, in honor of your patronage and being the first one to step up and throw some cashola our way. We're going to invest that, by the way. We're going to invest it in some Bitcoin. I mean, we're going to invest it in some headsets and some new equipment. But I said, I've got a program deep in the archives somewhere from my very first game in Assembly Hall in 1983 as a third grader. My parents took me, 10th row of the balcony. I thought I was in heaven. Actually, I was pretty close to heaven. It was so high. And I said it was February 23rd, 1983. I was a little bit off. It was February 19th. 1983.
How dare you get that wrong?
Wow.
I went deep in the bin, the archives this week, and that's what you do on Christmas break. And I found it. And I also missed it because I said Ted Kitchell was on the cover. It's actually Steve Buscey, number 54.
But number one in your heart.
From Washington, Indiana, I believe.
I think you're right.
He roamed the halls.
Hatchet.
He roamed the sidelines in the court of the Hatchet House. So and he was not a good-looking man.
Well, you know.
I mean, was he a good look? I mean, I don't mean to be profiling here, but
he's very serious.
Look at this.
The socks are very high. It's hard to tell.
If you know him, please send him this podcast.
Also, the shorts were very tight back then. Who could be happy with those shorts on?
But he had some big muscular thighs. But anyway, Ted Kitchell was my man back then, and he's in here somewhere. But anyway, 1983, they beat North.
James Worthy ad? Did I see James Worthy in there in a Laker uniform?
that?
No, I think I did.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. This is vintage.
Yeah.
So Scott, I'm sorry, but I can't give you this. This means so much to me. I've written in it. I've made notes.
He literally has on the cover. The cover says, as young kids want to do, he writes on above the Indiana. It says, Greg Nash, Booklet of Indiana, Northwestern. Yeah. And then because they didn't write it in, he wrote in versus Indiana.
Yeah.
Well, you just in case, I even clipped the article.
Was playing Michigan State, or
Knight scorches Big Ten officials after 74-65 win. He went off.
He does it after wins too.
He was f bombing and GD and everybody. But so this is special.
So we're gonna have to get you some swag from the Hoosier Town Breakdown in replacement of the promised. I don't think small claims court 100. I mean he might bring an action. We'll see.
Well, here's the good news. We've gleaned a corporate sponsorship from this deal because the Junction on page 24 of this program, the Junction is a genuine pit barbecue joint 1 mile east of College Mall at the stoplight, 4535 East 3rd Street. So if you go in there and you tell them that Zach, Allen, and Greg sent you, they will actually charge you more for your loin ribs, your short ribs, your pork, your beef, your chicken.
Your brisket, if you will.
Your brisket, if you will.
Not only the sauces, but the dry rubs, everybody. The dry rubs. And I think that's what's important here. So get down to the Junction, Bloomington, Indiana, for your...
Turn left to the stoplight and tell them AP sent you.
Can I ask you, right before you go to break, can I ask you, are you still a avid user of the word booklet? You wrote in booklet.
This is 1983.
Indiana.
He was very formal.
Did they call it a program back then, or did they?
You don't
call
realize
it a
I was that Catholic. Like, education. I slept with this for 6 months, man. It was incredible. Just Northwestern. I mean, what are you going to do?
All right. Well, with that, we'll be back in a minute and with more of the Hoosier Town Breakdown.
Well, I have a listener mailbag question.
All right, we're back with more Hoosier Town Breakdown. Zach McCrite.
Happy New Year, Alan.
Alan Platt. Hey, Happy New Year, Greg. Good to be back. So you got a mailbag question, did you say?
Yes.
Awesome.
Got a listener mailbag question. Rummaging through the sack of envelopes, baby, because it's crowded. It's crowded on the... So this is from loyal listener Chris in Georgetown, Indiana. But it's also a...
Georgetown, lovely town.
Yes.
Lovely town.
G-Town. Mm-hmm. A whole new era.
Home of Sherman Mintna, U.S. Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah, you guys are great. Google is really agreeing with you guys.
Thank you.
But also, Ken, loyal listener from DePaul, he had a similar question revolving around one Christian Landers.
Oh, God. The biggest question among IU fans.
Is it Lander or Landers?
Let's give
And why don't we know this?
I think it's Christian Lander.
Intern, do your job.
Where is Foster?
So Ken from DePaul had this question a couple weeks ago, and now Chris from Georgetown, he says, how do you think Landers will be used throughout the rest of the Big Ten season? Lead to his possible transfer? Or five-star bust? That's multiple questions, by the way.
I don't think he's a bust.
Thank you, Chris and Ken, for your loyal listenership.
He is a guy that I think, and I didn't watch him that much in high school or AAU, but I saw some of his play. And I'll just say that he is one of those guys that, one, came in early and probably shouldn't have, and two, probably suffered from coaching in the lower ranks, you know, high school and AAU, where he was a scorer and was not about playing defense. And I think that that's the only thing keeping him off the floor. I just think that last year he was a defensive liability when he came in. I think this year he just doesn't give us as much as some of the other guys off the bench. So when Leo comes in, I think he's better. I think, Finnessy's better, obviously, on defense. I think Finnessy's as good of a defender as we have, maybe. But he doesn't have the confidence, and his head's just somewhere else. I don't think he has confidence in himself yet to play at a level that I think he should be able to. So I think I told you that I thought that, Lander ought to be getting more minutes because I do think that he can add something. And our guard play hasn't been great in a number of games. I'm not sure why we don't go deeper.
So I think Lander stays. I think he's got to look at the future, and he's got the two guards ahead of him leaving. I know there's some recruits coming in.
But I do think the coaches, I feel like they're probably handling that the right way. I think they're being honest with him, which I think he would appreciate. You know, I think he's matured a little bit. You know, he did come in. If Archie didn't get him to come early and snag him from the halls of high school like he did, he's probably going to go somewhere else. So Archie had to secure that, right? Wasn't probably in the best interest of the kid, but that's what happened. So he's a freshman in reality. Well, not reality, theoretically. I just think that I think he can learn a lot in Woodson's system. I think, you know, Coach Fife and some of the other coaches, I feel like they're probably handling things pretty well with him and being very honest with him. And I think he's got a lot of potential. I think he stays, and I think he has more meaningful minutes next year. And I think there's times where he's going to help us this year because Xavier Johnson, X-Man, he's a few hand checks away from fouling out in a few games in the future. He loves to put his hands on people. And then Rob is Rob. He's going to be up and down like a roller coaster. Whoop, whoop. And so I think Lander's going to get some opportunities this year, and I think he's going to have moments. And I think that's what the staff is telling him, that just be ready for the moment.
Zach, do you think it's weird, though, that he doesn't get off the bench for multiple games in a row?
Yes. Yes. This was the first game that I thought, okay, I get why he's not playing. Like, you know, and we've talked about it ad nauseum already, like the defense, the guard defense, the perimeter defense in this game in particular left a lot to be desired, right? And so Lander not being out there kind of made sense. At least for me, it felt like it was the first time it kind of did. Because in all the other games, yes, defensively he is a liability. And I feel like so are a lot of the other guards on this team, Rob Finney excluded. But you know, so I'm like, yeah, I mean, let's offense, let's go. I mean, I'm kind of the ilk now. Let's get the offense going, right? You know, let's let the defense work itself out as the year goes on, and let's score the basketball, because that's what, and again,
this is that what wins games? Scoring the basketball?
So I've been told.
Put the ball in the hoop and all is good.
So let's score. Let's shoot the three, you know, give me more Parker Stewart. Give me anybody. Can you shoot the three? Good. Go. Can you get to the rim? Good. Go. And I feel like that's where Lander could be, you know, someone who at least fits in. You know, the point guard on the offensive end for IU is just a huge question mark, right? At least it is to me. I feel like everybody on the offensive end when it comes to the point guard position is just like, we could really do if we really had a really good point guard. Mm-hmm. In lieu of that, let's see what Lander can do. He is super athletic and can play on the offensive end in spurts. Defensively, obviously, leaves a lot to be desired. And if that means he's got to be on the bench just because it's an effort thing or it's an IQ thing on the defensive end, so be it. But I'm with you. Let's see the kid play. I'm for it. I mean, the question becomes for me, if I'm not mistaken, both Xavier and Rob are juniors. Is that right? So
they both could potentially have another year, right?
Yeah, we're talking. He could be third on the depth chart again next year, and that I think could be the big question mark as you go forward.
We'll have to check that. I was thinking.
I think because of the COVID year, I think they both could have an extra year. I think they both want one.
Correct.
They're both.
Yeah. They're both seniors.
They could leave. Yeah. They could leave, but yeah. they also both could stay because of COVID. So like I look at, and this may not be fair, I look at Christian as a freshman, and I look at you know, both Finney and Johnson as quote unquote juniors. Mm-hmm. You know, and it could be that Woodson says, you know, Xavier hit the road or Rob hit the road. I mean, that could be very well within his bounds to do, and then Christian gets the call up. But just in case, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you can table this topic for another day, but this could be a big talking point during this off season. Who do you want Woodson to keep with a COVID year? Do you want anybody? I mean, obviously, if Trace could, you know, that'd be great. I mean, I know he's still got another year regardless, but, you know, could you keep one of these guys or two of these guys? And if so, who? That could be a big question going forward. But the point guard position to me is something that is just always, there's this red light going off, like, let's get something done.
Yeah.
You know, I think Greg has said a couple of times in our past shows that it's been since Yogi where we had a point guard that we just felt was a lock point guard. You know, he's going to start. You know, he's going to give you what you need. And even at times he had challenges. But Yogi was about as good of a point guard as we had in, you know, decade plus,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, and that point guards, they win you games in college. I mean, that's you know, not so much in as much in NBA, but college guards win.
Yeah, when everybody talks about having a coach on the floor, it really needs to be the point guard because they control so much. They control the pace. They control the play calling. They start at the top and kind of set the plays off, obviously. And I just think that, you know, Xavier is so new to our system and he's erratic at times. I mean, he gives us a lot of he's like a lot of risk reward in a lot of ways.
For sure.
But less than maybe we had with Devontae Green, where Devontae Green could just go insane at times. I think Xavier, except for maybe the end of the Wisconsin game, I think typically he can rein himself back in. And he said, you know, one of his personal concerns about how he plays is that he plays too often with emotion and not keeping himself in check. And I think Woodson's worked with him on that. But, you know, I just feel like I don't understand why Lander's not getting 3 to 5 minutes a game. I feel like he's given Bates that chance. He's given Leal that chance. And it's got to just be the defensive end. But to me, it's hurting his development and maybe his long-term, connection to the program.
I will say one thing that did give me pause during this Penn State game was the lack of bench minutes, period.
It was a tight rotation.
It was very tight.
Second half especially, yeah.
And I mean, and I don't have, I need, I wish I should have pulled up the box score, but I'd be shocked if anybody other than Finnessy off the bench got more than 10 minutes in the game. That's how tight I felt the rotation was. And it, to me, I mean, I remember thinking this with about 3 or 4 minutes left in the second half. We talked before we came on air, Alan, about how one of the things I like, and it's just weird that this was one of the things that I enjoyed watching from Woodson, is that I always felt like he knew when to call a timeout, right? And one of those times was after the you mentioned the 5 offensive rebound possession that Penn State had during the game. Immediately after IU finally got the defensive rebound on that possession, Woodson called a timeout, and I was like, thank you. Those guys have to be gassed after playing defense for probably a minute and 45 yeah, seconds, right? Long. And the whole thing was like, man, this team is tired. Like, I felt that they were tired with like 3 minutes left in the game. I don't know if anybody else did, but like, why is that the case? And then I got to thinking, who else played?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's Fantasy had 24 minutes, which for him, he was 3 of 8 shooting, 1 of 3 from the free throw. From 3-point range, 2 of 2 from the free throw line. Got 2 rebounds. So Fantasy gave us a lot, but no one else had over 10. Geronimo came in with 9 minutes, gave us 2 of 3, 3 rebounds. So in 9 minutes, he was 2 of 3 shooting and had 3 rebounds. I'm kind of surprised he didn't get more minutes in that game. Nobody else had more than 6. Bates had 6 minutes, and nobody contributed any other points off the bench. So yeah, it was a really tight rotation. I think early in the first half, Woodson got some questions about why he had subbed for Race and Trace early, and his response was, look, the guys played 35 minutes each. You know, I just had to give him a breather somewhere in that game because he knew it'd probably be down to the end of the, you know, end of the game. It'd be tight, and he needed those guys to be fresh. So I think he did try to get them a blow early, which probably turned out to be the right thing. It just was a little bit frustrating when you see a lineup in there that doesn't have any real true score. I think he had Finnessy in there to maybe score a bit, but that was it.
Basketball's a funny game because one more shot goes in, and we're talking about, you know, in spite of them playing, in spite of Penn State out-rebounding us and getting us to play their pace, and in spite of this, this, and this, we still found a way to win.
Sure.
But no, an extra shot doesn't go in, and it's we're looking at a different scenario. But kind of looking ahead, I think that, you know, we talked about the fact that we don't have any quad one or quad two wins, which is troubling. But we've got four of the next six games at home, and we've got an opportunity to pick up five high-quality wins. So we've got Ohio State at home, followed by Minnesota at home. Then we go to Iowa, to Nebraska, and then back home against Purdue and Michigan. So for the next six at home, we've got
Penn State at home after that. So
lots of opportunities.
I like that you did that all from memory too. By the way,
that's well done.
It's a sickness, but I think that we've got opportunities. So I mean, again, Penn State stings, and that lingers a little bit, but we've got a chance to get past it and right the ship. You know, if we can beat Ohio State, which, you know, Ohio State's, they've made us look pretty bad offensively in recent history. They're 3-0 against the same three teams that we're 1-2 against in the Big Ten this year. They beat Wisconsin by 18, and Purdue just lost to Wisconsin at home. It's a funny season, but we've got opportunities. And so it's a matter of our guys rising to the occasion.
So why don't we wrap up with a couple of things? You did want to mention the women's basketball team. Women Hoosiers had a big win against Maryland.
Yeah, any IU team that wins, I want to talk about. You know, I don't know if it's rowing, lacrosse, the soccer team, you know, if they're hanging more banner, we want to talk about them. So, no, but we're an equal opportunity podcast unit, so we want to talk about the women's team who beat a very good Maryland team in overtime at the Assembly Hall, the Simon Scott Assembly Hall, and that was a big win. And now we're sixth in the country, and I'm down with that. I'm not mad about that.
Totally down.
Yeah. So because if we don't make the tournament, at least we can have the women to cheer on.
They
right?
are fun to watch.
They are fun to watch. It's a fun style of play.
It's a really good. I think they are really. They put together a really good team. They are, I think, they are fun to watch. Their offensive play is really good. You know, it's just one of those teams that you enjoy cheering for. And I think Terry Moran is pretty special. Hopefully, Purdue doesn't try to steal another
right.
coach away.
Yeah,
eventually.
It's even more satisfying that we're winning with a boiler.
I have said, I have seen on my, you know, I have a couple different IU friends text chains going back and forth, and. There have been friends of mine, diehard IU fans, friends of mine, be like, gosh, if only our offense ran as fluently as the IU women's offense ran. And I'm like, oh, man. I mean, I get it. I understand. Like, again, more PTSD, but I get it.
We've gone to that level. Yes.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
To your point, we got eight more games in January. I mean, just to think about, just in the month of January, we got eight more basketball games to play. The tone of a podcast could be a lot different 30 days from now. So
absolutely.
I think we just have to see how that goes.
And it's really not, honestly, we're not, again, we're one shot from talking totally different. I really do. I mean, the last thing I want to tell you guys, and I want this point to be just known, is that I feel like this game in particular, based on some of the things we already talked about, pace of the game, et cetera, was a outlier compared to what we've seen from Mike Woodson so far in just in a small sample size worth of games. It was very slow. It was very methodical. It was a lack of perimeter defense like we have not seen so far in this year. And it's just all those things and no rebounding. I mean, and tight rotation. It was just a weird, weird game with a lot of outliers that we have not seen so far in this game in this year with Mike Woodson. So I'm willing to throw this one out.
Good, I've thrown it out.
Yeah, right, because I'm with you. I'm well, done. Plus
I like the idea.
So our predictions are pretty much perfect, right? So we predict.
Oh, you all had Penn State winning that
no,
game.
We predicted that we'd have two losses up to this point. We have three.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Let's do this. We'll close it out with everybody giving maybe one change you'd like to see or development you'd like to see in the team, and then if you have a lineup change, a proposed starting lineup change, throw that out. We'll start with you, Greg, because you were going to this about 40 minutes ago.
Here.
You were ready to rock.
Yeah, I was texting you at lunch saying I got something. No, I'm just kidding. I think I'd like to see, I mean, obviously I'd love to see more
clean looks for our shooters. We've got really good shooters on the team. Miller Kopp's a great shooter. Anthony Leal's a great shooter. Parker Stewart's a great shooter. I probably got those in reverse order. Parker's probably our best. Leal is a close second in my mind. And Miller Kopp, he can fill it up as he did at Syracuse. But I think Kopp and Stewart are kind of the same-ish player. I think you start Tamar Bates. I think you bring you keep Kopp in the lineup, starting lineup. You bring Bates in, have him start. And then you bring Stewart off the bench after he has a chance to kind of assess things, bring him in like we used to do for the old Nick Zeisloft, or a Matt Roth, run some sets for him, some very specific stuff. Don't start him. Let him come off the bench, get a feel for the game. But Geronimo needs to come off the bench quickly as well. Geronimo is a matchup problem. He's athletic as you know what. He's got skills. And going back to Bates, he can score at multiple positions. He doesn't. We don't lose anything defensively when we bring him in the game relative to a Kopp or a Stewart. So I think Bates needs reps. I think he needs time. He's got a lot of upside. So that's my wish. You start him, bring Stewart off the bench, and I think Geronimo needs more minutes. And we're going to have Trey Galloway back starting this Thursday against Ohio State. I think Trey is going to help us in spots.
All right. Well,
Geronimo with the 3 or 4.
3.5. I think he's going to have to play some 4.
Yeah, I mean, I can't recall a whole lot of times where he's been in as a 3, but I'm kind of interested in him playing 3, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, I think a fun lineup, just to piggyback on the lineup thing, it would kind of be cool just to see. I don't feel like I've seen it a lot, if at all, but to have Trace Race at 5-4 and then
Geronimo
at 3 and just see what happens. That brings your shooting down. I mean, a tad, but then you have your choice at the 2, obviously, whether it be Kopp or Leal or whoever.
But that could create some matchup problems for the other team.
You know, let's get a little bigger and see what happens. If you're not going to put a bunch of shooters on the court at the same time, then let's see Geronimo at the 3 and let's see what happens.
Agree.
I wouldn't even mind seeing, although a lot of people wouldn't agree, but I wouldn't mind seeing Race come off the bench and start somebody like Geronimo in there. I sometimes Race seems to get off to a bit of a slow start, and I think he is one of those guys that seems to wait for Trace to kind of establish himself. And I just wonder if him coming off the bench and seeing how he'd fit into the game and the flow of the game might help him a little bit. I mean, the guy is he should be a double-double every night. And, I mean, you can do that off the bench. Mm-hmm. I would see it as a 6-starter rotation. And I wouldn't mind seeing – I'm with you. I mean, my Christmas list was, adding Tamar Bates more into the lineup. If he starts, I wouldn't be mad about it. But I feel like there's got to be something mixed up, because I feel like we get off to slow starts in both the starts of each half. And we always have the same starters in there. And to me, there's got to be some variation there. I don't know what it is, but I think Woodson needs to try to figure out if there's a way to do that. The other thing, as far as long-term development, I really would like to see us just get more of a flow on the offensive end. I just feel like it still has – it always feels very haphazard. I don't know. You know, every once in a while I'll see us in a flow and I'll see the ball move and I think, wow, that's just beautiful basketball. But it's few and far between.
Yeah.
But I think that they've got the ability. When you can play inside out and you got guys that can shoot, that should be a recipe for a pretty good offense. But it feels like we just don't take the advantage of that enough.
Yeah, they've got to figure it out. And I trust that the staff will, and Coach Woodson. And you mentioned something about 6. Can we start 6 players? Can we just do that?
Well, I mean,
where have we been?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that help?
You've got to convince the 6th person off the bench that they are a true starter. They're just not on the court at the.
I thought maybe COVID. There's some new COVID rules I didn't know about.
6 fouls, 6 starters.
Your job for the next podcast is to try to sell that 6th starter on the fact that he is the 6th starter.
It's
I'd
tough.
Like to hear you try to do that.
Well, you know,
Lander, you're not playing any minutes, but you're essentially a starter. So just hang in there.
Yeah. We believe in you.
Sold.
Yeah.
You're right, Coach. I'll hang in there.
We've had a few players that I think really relish the coming off the bench.
Yeah, I agree.
but there's not a lot of them. And somebody like Trace, who's a double-double, a walking double-double probably.
He'll do anything you ask.
That's the thing.
Yeah, he'll do anything you ask.
But I just don't know if Geronimo had made a better case for himself over the start of this year, you know, you could play with that lineup or even go like a four guard Trace in the middle and really do a true four out one in type thing, you know, and really, I mean, to the extent, how many times did you see Penn State all drop into the paint as soon as Trace got the ball? Somebody had to be open. Our spacing kind of sucked a number of times, which kind of killed that, and he didn't have an ability to pass out. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how they play around with that. So we will get back together and see where we are after this. But I'm guessing that they won't have six starters. And I'm also guessing that Tamar Bates will not start.
Prediction.
But let's hope for the best. And Zach, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, this has been fun.
Thank you. This was a good time. I'm sad I didn't get a second beverage.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're slow on the old-fashioned service.
Too busy just talking it up, baby, breaking it down.
Well, we'll be back again. And, Greg, thanks for hosting in the shed.
Yes, sir. That's what we do. Thanks for being here, guys.
All right. Well, until next time, that's all of the Hoosier Town Breakdown. Thanks for joining us. So long, everybody.
So long, everybody.
Mom!
Meatloaf!